Welcome back, motherfuckers. My name is Brittany. This podcast is sponsored by White Claw. Just kidding. I goddamn wish. Welcome to Heard of a Murder. If you guys have returned from episode 1 and 2, thank you very much.
So this is Patrick. Just so you guys know, me and Christina have no fucking idea what she's going to come up with. So that's why we just start laughing our ass off right away.
We just let her do what she wants.
Yeah, basically. Just roll with it. There's no stopping her anyways.
So how was your guys' week? It's been, what, 2 weeks since we recorded?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if that's what our going rate's going to be, but I don't know. Maybe we'll do 1 week. Maybe we'll do 2 weeks. It depends. We got busy lives. We got shit to do. We got kids, jobs.
Yeah. some people do.
Did any of you guys look up the case that we're doing today?
I briefly looked it up. I just kind of did like a little summary that I saw online, and it looked like it's gonna be really, really good.
Yeah. I didn't want to ruin it.
So I am gonna be going to the lake this weekend, and I'm thinking that I'll do some research while I'm up at the lake, and maybe I'll do like a lake case for the next time, because I think lake cases are kind of interesting.
Oh yeah.
And they get in the vibe. So if anybody has any lake cases out there, just let me know. But I'm leaving Thursday, so DM us before then. Patrick, that gives you like 24 hours to edit.
Yeah, basically.
Which you always do anyways.
He has the time.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
He gets there.
I have zero time. I have less time than you guys.
All right, let's get into it. So our case today is going to piss Christina off, because I feel like Christina has kind of shown a predisposition for getting pissed off at bystanders that don't report shit. And this case is full of them. So I think Tina's going to come out in this podcast. It's safe to say.
You know me too well. That's sad. It's been like, this is the third episode. You already know when I'm going to get pissed off.
100%. I think I'm going to start calling that part of you, Tina.
I'll take it.
Okay. So our case takes place on October 26, 1965. The Indianapolis police responded to a call at 3850 East New York Street. When they get to this house, they go inside and they're led down to the basement. And in this basement, laying on the cold floor, there's a mattress. And on top of the mattress is the body of a 16-year-old girl. And her name is Sylvia Likens. The owner of the home, her name is Gertrude Banaszewski, and she tells police that Sylvia was viciously attacked by a gang of boys. But anyone looking at Sylvia could tell that that's not what happened and that her injuries weren't suffered from one isolated incident. She was incredibly underweight, very pale, incredibly dirty, very disheveled. Her body was covered in sores, burns, bruises, and these were all at different stages of the healing process, which means it was repeated attacks on her. But with this view of the body, this isn't even what drew the police's attention. So they clearly saw that stood out was on her stomach were the words carved, "I'm a prostitute and proud of it."
What?
What the fuck?
Now, Sylvia Likens was born the third of five children. She has an older brother and sister, Diana and Daniel, and they were fraternal twins. And then her younger brother and sister, Jenny and Benny, they were also fraternal twins. Her father's name was Lester Likens, and her mother was Elizabeth Frances Likens, but everybody called her Betty. And her parents were actually carnival workers, and they often traveled for work. Now, they would take the boys with them to the carnival circuits, but they said that it wasn't appropriate or suitable for young girls. So usually they left the girls at home with a relative, and most of the time it was their grandmother. Now, Sylvia's father, he meets Gertrude Banaszewski, and they lived in the same neighborhood. And however it came up, Gertrude ended up agreeing to take care of the girls, Sylvia and her younger sister, Jenny, for just $20 a week. And then they took the boys and they left on the carnival circuit. Gertrude Banaszewski, she was born in 1929. Her maiden name was Gertrude Van Fossett. She was the third of six children, and she had a very close relationship with her father, but he died in 1940 from a heart attack. And her relationship with her mother was incredibly contentious. So this probably led her to drop out of school at the age of 16. And she actually ran off and married a man by the name of John Banaszewski. And he was an Indianapolis police officer. So together they had four children. And their relationship was very tumultuous. He abused Gertrude constantly. And then after 10 years of being together, they ended up splitting up. Now, while they are separated, Gertrude marries a man and they end up getting divorced. So after this kind of brief, you know, marriage with another man, her and John reunite, they get remarried, and then they have two more children together. So
what the hell?
Yes. Yes. So now we're at six children, which is a lot.
Yeah.
So the couple permanently divorces 7 years later. So now Gertrude, she's 36 years old and she's a divorcee. She does what she's always done in the past and she ends up remarrying again. And she marries a 23-year-old by the name of Dennis Lee Wright. Dennis also beat Gertrude. And there were claims that he actually, during one of the abusive attacks, ended up causing Gertrude to miscarry because she was pregnant with their child. But Gertrude did end up having one child with Dennis Lee Wright, and they named that child Dennis Jr. So shortly after Dennis Jr. was born, Dennis Sr. abandons the family. So he leaves Gertrude alone with seven children to raise.
Jesus.
Yeah.
So the seven children are Paula, she's 17, Stephanie's 15, 12-year-old John, 11-year-old Marie, 10-year-old Shirley, 8-year-old James, and then 1-year-old Dennis Jr. So this woman pretty much was pregnant, I feel like, her entire adult life.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. You know how many months of sobriety that is? I mean, I'm assuming she was sober for
months or years.
In totality? Yeah, years.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it could be like one of those parents that have like a child and they're like, oh, they're like 36 months. You mean 3 years? Your child's 3 years old.
He's three.
I have a question for you. Do you ever, so you know when people say, oh, I love being pregnant. Did you ever feel that way? Because I hated being pregnant.
No, I didn't.
Like I always feel like people are lying about it.
Yeah.
Like there's no way like you could just love being pregnant. There has like they could never say one bad thing about being pregnant. And I could name like 10 bad things about being pregnant.
I was sick, had to be sober. I was hot as hell all the time, super uncomfortable, lost sleep, my back hurt. I had really bad acid reflux. I was gaining weight like crazy, couldn't fit into any of my clothes. Does anyone else have anything that sucks about pregnancy? Because it's everything. I think
was your number one though? Sobriety?
Yeah.
I could have called that. I was going to answer for you, but
no,
I think it wasn't being sober. It like I'm an alcoholic. I always tell Berto, like, remember that one time I was sober? And he was like, you mean when you were pregnant? I'm like, yeah, that's the same thing. It was being around a lot of drunk people all the time because you had all these parties and nobody slows down and they're like, oh, free. Or like, you know, we have a designated driver. I'm like, well, go fuck yourself. That's not fun. And it's not like the man pays you back after you get done. Like they're just, yeah, it's frustrating. Yeah, I didn't like being pregnant either. It wasn't fun.
Yeah.
So Gertrude was able to earn a living by babysitting, cleaning houses, doing laundry, just basically odd jobs around the neighborhood. And around the time that Dennis left Gertrude, she finds out that her oldest child, 17-year-old Paula, is pregnant. And not only that, but Paula is pregnant with a middle-aged married man's child. So this is 1965, and being unmarried and pregnant in itself is kind of looked down upon, but you're also pregnant as somebody's mistress, pretty much.
Yeah.
So under the stress of, you know, being left alone to take care of seven children, her daughter's pregnant, Gertrude becomes incredibly depressed. She stops taking care of herself. She smokes cigarettes constantly, develops severe asthma because of it. She was significantly underweight, and they estimated that she was approximately 100 pounds at this time, and she was 36 years old. So,
wow.
So when the Likens leave their two daughters, Jenny and Sylvia, at this home, it was obvious that they did not inspect the home in any way, shape, or form, because Gertrude's home was far from suitable because she had no stove, no microwave. There was only about four beds in the house, despite there being eight people living in the home, not including Sylvia or Jenny. And in the pantry, there was only bread and crackers to eat. The house was also super filthy, and they were saying that there was only four sets of dishes for people to eat off of.
Wow.
So Gertrude was not making it happen as a single mom. She was not doing the damn thing. She was doing nothing, it sounds like. Now, Jenny Likens, Sylvia's younger sister, would later testify in court that the first week they were at the Banaszewski house, it was very enjoyable and it was normal. And the girls went to school, they hung out with friends, they went to church, and they had a normal life. But this was incredibly short-lived because after the first week, Gertrude didn't get that $20 check from Lester and Betty, and she turns into a completely different person. She loses her shit. So when Jenny and Sylvia come home from school, she brings them into her bedroom and she tells them, I took care of you two bitches for nothing. Then she has them pull down their skirts and their underwear, lay across her bed, and then she takes a large wooden paddle. And the way it's described is it almost sounds like a fraternity paddle that you use to haze new members.
Yeah.
And just beats the shit out of these two girls with the wooden paddle. And so this would be like the first of many beatings that they would sustain, mostly Sylvia, but Jenny does get beat occasionally along the way. But side note, the money order ended up arriving the very next day in the mail after she beat Jenny and Sylvia.
So it's probably the shitty ass postal service's fault.
Yeah, let's blame everybody.
I'm just saying, like, no, that the check wasn't there on time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But go ahead, sorry.
She already sounds like a psychopath to me.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, she is.
Like,
I mean,
you're going to blame the kids for the parents not sending it on time? You know what I mean? Like, it's fucked up.
And then what's insane with the story is there's never any claims of abuse on her own children, because you would think that somebody that has that abusive nature would do that to her own children as well. I looked and found nothing that said that she ever beat or touched any of her own children at all.
So she just take out everything on someone else.
Yes. Well, and it kind of sounds like, and I don't have this in my notes, but Sylvia was a very upbeat, beautiful girl, and everyone described her as a beautiful, outgoing personality. And it's from what it sounded like doing some research, is it kind of sounded like she felt like Sylvia was in competition with 17-year-old Paula. And I feel like there was like almost like a vicarious jealousy. Like, she was jealous for Paula because Sylvia was more beautiful, more liked. I think everybody called her Cookie was like the nickname that everyone gave her. And then Paula is pregnant, 17, and and Sylvia is just this like bright young child full of innocence. So,
you know what's sad? There's like still people out there like that. You know what I mean? Who like compare their children to other children.
Yes.
And probably don't like, if they feel they're better than the other child.
Yeah. It's such an ugly way to live, to be honest. Yeah. And I think that people really do take that stuff personally. Like it's always a competition to them. So one day, Sylvia and Jenny are collecting Coca-Cola cans and soda bottles throughout the neighborhood because they were going to turn the recyclables in and get money for candy. And that must have been something they did often. So when they come home with the candy, Gertrude accuses the girls of stealing. And Sylvia steps in and she's like, listen, we collected Coca-Cola bottles and soda cans and we were able to earn the money. It was all honestly done. Well, Gertrude calls Sylvia a liar and again makes her lay across her bed, have her pull her underwear and her skirt down, and then again beats her with the paddle.
What a fucking bitch.
Shortly after this, 11-year-old Marie Banaszewski, she claims she overhears Sylvia remarking at school to somebody else that she wants a lot of boy to fill her up. Now, I don't think this is true because you'll see kind of like the turn of events, but this kind of seems like the common theme is that, overhearing Sylvia remarking stuff at school. Well, Marie apparently runs and tells Gertrude, and Gertrude goes irate. She begins yelling at Sylvia. She's calling her a whore, calling her a prostitute. She starts punching her. She's kicking Sylvia in her crotch repeatedly while she's calling her names. And then afterwards,
holy shit.
Yes. And it was brutal. Afterwards, Sylvia, she is just completely torn down. She tries to sit in a chair. 17-year-old Paula throws Sylvia out of the chair and says, quote, you ain't fit to sit in chairs. And I don't know why, but I say that like in my mind, I feel like there's like a Southern accent to that, even though it's Indianapolis. Like, who says you ain't fit to sit in chairs? Like, wow.
Can you say it in a Southern accent?
I thought that's what it was. Did I not do that good?
No, I don't. I think you can do better.
I don't. No, I can't. That was it. That was 110%.
That was literally the one.
Yeah, British is completely different. Like, British accents are solid. I'll maybe do that for you guys one day. It's got to come out. It can't be forced. It's just got to happen.
I've witnessed it. It is impressive.
Yeah, it's decent. It's not bad. So at this point, Sylvia's abuse does get worse. She's no longer allowed to sit in any chairs in the household. And it becomes common for all of the Banaszewski children to beat on Sylvia. So they would consistently hit her, kick her, push her down the stairs. They would call her names such as prostitute, which is to me ironic. And this is why I say I think that it's kind of a deflection from Paula, because she's pregnant and Sylvia's not. And yeah. So Sylvia's getting called prostitute and whore and whatever they're calling her.
But at some time, Sylvia has to go home to her parents, right? They're not just gone forever.
So this story is going to take place in the course of 2 to 3 months.
Oh.
So they're gone on the carnival circuit during this time. And they're basically, so Gertrude's essentially boarding the two girls for $20 a week. So keep in mind that
$20 a week in that time period is probably decent. I don't know what that is now.
It is. I want to say that I read her rent, Gertrude Banaszewski's rent for the home was $50 a week.
Okay.
So I don't know if that gives you kind of a comparison.
Okay.
And now it doesn't sound like she had a very nice residence. The pictures didn't look bad, but this is the 1960s. So, So 15-year-old Stephanie Banaszewski, she's dating a boy by the name of 15-year-old Coy Hubbard. One day, Coy goes to the Banaszewski residence and he tells Gertrude that he overheard Sylvia and Jenny telling other kids at school that Paula and Stephanie were having sex for money. So the Likens girls, according to him, are telling other girls that the Banaszewski girls are prostituting themselves. Mm-hmm. So Gertrude allows Coy to viciously attack and beat on Sylvia for her alleged comments right there in the living room.
Oh my God.
And while Coy is beating on Sylvia, Paula joins in and she ends up breaking her wrist, hitting Sylvia multiple times in the face. And then later she would get a cast on her arm because she broke her wrist. And there were claims that she would constantly still beat on Sylvia with the cast.
Holy shit.
Yes.
I'm trying to think why the kids would do this. Like, I don't get it, because they saw their mom do it. So they're like, okay, she's like free game. We can just beat her up.
They're just pieces of shit.
Yeah, I don't.
But like, why isn't Sylvia and it's the other sister, right?
Jenny.
Why don't they just dip, you know, like not come back? I guess they're young though. So
it's funny that you say that, because like the entire time I'm doing this research, you're thinking that you're like, they're not held hostage.
Right. They're at school. Tell someone at school.
Doors aren't being locked.
Right.
You know, they could leave at any time, but I think it was one of those things where it started off good. And I think it was, I mean, it was quick, but at the same time, they probably saw it as a slow kind of progression. And, you know, it wasn't like they were suddenly kidnapped. I think, you know, it's one thing when you're taken off the street, but this is supposed to be their caretaker. But I'm thinking the same thing, like at any time, because we know how it ends. We know Sylvia ends up dead at the end of the story. So at what time did you not think to get up and leave?
Yeah.
Well, even them going to school, like, even with the teachers, they didn't see the bruises or, like, Sylvia losing weight, anything.
Yeah, so that would...
they have to report it? I feel like people should be fired for that.
That's, there are claims that people saw it and didn't do anything, and that's why I said this case is going to piss you off. Because I didn't put this in my notes, but after Paula breaks her wrist on Sylvia, there was a family that moved in next door, and they briefly... thought about having Gertrude watch their kids while they went to work. And because they said, oh, well, they have so many kids, she must be a good caretaker. Well, they went over for a barbecue. And then I guess Sylvia like had bruises all over her and she had this huge black eye. And I guess Paula was walking around basically bragging about it and saying, yeah, I hit her, blah, blah, blah. And all they thought was, ooh, better not have our kids be taken care of by then. But at no time did they ever call the cops. So that's another example of like a bystander that really didn't do anything. Bystanders that really didn't do anything. And you'll see later in the story that they're actually witnessed a little bit more and still don't do anything. So testimonies during court later also revealed that Coy Hubbard, that neighborhood boy that was dating 50-year-old Stephanie Banaszewski, that he would, when he would come over, he would actually utilize Sylvia as practice for judo, because he did judo. So he would punch, kick, throw her, and he would practice downstairs in the basement, which is all concrete. So he would practice his throws on her, and he would slam her down on the hard concrete. And there was, like I said, the court testimony said that multiple times she would just go unconscious.
Yeah, because judo is no joke. Like, you're standing up and basically throwing someone, but making them fall at the same time as throwing them. Like,
but on hard concrete.
Yeah, screw that. People get knocked out on mats, let alone, you know, concrete.
Then,
that's crazy.
Then you have Sylvia's best friend, Anna Sisko. And Anna would come around to visit Sylvia. So Gertrude one day convinces Anna that Sylvia was telling kids at school that Anna's mother was a whore.
Oh, my God.
So Gertrude brings Anna to the Banaszewski home, and she tells Anna to hit Sylvia. And Anna fucking does it. She's supposed to be her best friend, and she starts hitting and fighting Sylvia in the middle of the fucking living room.
Wow.
Now, Gertrude tells Stephanie Banaszewski's best friend, her name is Judy Duke, that Sylvia was spreading rumors about her mom being a whore around the school. So, just as it, you know, things have been going, Gertrude brings Judy to the house, tells Judy to fight Sylvia. And Judy does it right there in the living room. Now, while Judy's attacking Sylvia, Gertrude looks over at Jenny, Sylvia's younger sister, and she tells Jenny to hit Sylvia. So she's trying to get Jenny to get in on the abuse. And Jenny refuses, and then Gertrude starts hitting Jenny in her face until Jenny agrees to hit Sylvia. Now, Judy Duke would actually go home after this assault, and she would tell her parents about what she witnessed. And her parents' response was that that's just what happens when somebody gets punished.
Oh, my God.
What? This. I mean, I guess punishment were different back in the 60s, but I don't know.
Fuck, this is like a whole new level of punishment, though. Letting all these kids beat on this poor girl, it makes me sick to my stomach.
And it becomes a thing. So all these kids would frequent the house, in addition to other neighborhood boys that aren't specifically kind of talked about in different stories, but there would be a lot more neighborhood kids that would come by, and they would all just beat on Sylvia. Like, she literally was just beat on like a fucking like stray dog that was like treated like shit. Like, that's that became her life.
And all these kids testified in court?
We'll get to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm jumping.
There's a lot of piece of shit people. So, I know we've only done a few podcasts, but this one already pisses me off more than it. Yeah.
Oh, I thought the other. I thought the other about Christina the off. Whole time, because I'm like, I'm like, she's over here talking about, you know, why didn't anyone say anything? Why didn't anybody call the cops? And this is the epitome of people that witnessed. And this case could, like, somebody could have saved Sylvia at any time during this case. And there was like multiple opportunities.
Absolutely.
And it just didn't happen. This girl flew under every radar in the book.
And I know you said it already, but I didn't catch it. How old is Sylvia?
16.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, my thing is, like I mentioned earlier about the school, like, I don't know if people were mandated, well, if teachers were mandated reporters back then.
I doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt it.
But
I doubt it. I'm pretty sure they were probably still able to beat kids at this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. Oh, yeah.
They're using, well, I mean, and parents are probably using belts, stuff like that all the time. So.
And this story is only getting worse. I'm going to warn you right now. This is, in comparison to what happens, she's going through nothing. So one day Sylvia comes home from school, because she's still going to school. And she tells Gertrude that she needs sweatpants for gym class. Gertrude says no. And so Sylvia, requiring to have sweatpants for gym class, she steals a pair from the school. And Gertrude ends up seeing Sylvia with the sweatpants, and she asks her where she got them. And then Sylvia's like, I had to steal them. Like, you wouldn't buy me any, and I had to have some. So Gertrude goes berserk again. And she starts beating on Sylvia. And she seems like she always is kicking her in the crotch multiple times for whatever reason. She beats her with a belt, and then she takes a cigarette and she burns the tip of every one of her fingers with a cigarette.
Oh, fuck.
And tells her that's a way to mitigate her stealing. So from that point forward, anybody who smoked in the Banaszewski household would put their lit cigarettes out on Sylvia like she was a fucking ashtray.
Shut the fuck up.
Oh my God.
And Sylvia,
poor girl.
And then at this time, Sylvia was rarely allowed to eat, and which is why she was so malnourished. And Gertrude would every once in a while kind of feed her crackers from time to time just to keep her alive and to keep her breathing. So there was one point where Sylvia again was collecting bottles throughout the neighborhood because she was trying to scrounge for money because she wanted to eat because she was so fucking hungry. So when she comes home with the recyclables, Gertrude again accuses of her of stealing, right? And I'm going to have to give everybody a trigger warning that's listening because this gets kind of ugly. And then Gertrude forces Sylvia to strip down naked in front of all these children. Because at this point, this household is just like a fucking haven for neighborhood children. So she has Sylvia strip down naked and she hands Sylvia one of the glass Coca-Cola bottles that she had collected for recycling. And she forces her to masturbate with it in front of all these neighborhood girls and boys.
What the fuck?
That's fucking twisted.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, where are all these little stories coming from? Is it just coming from the court testimony?
A lot of it's from court testimony.
Okay.
Because, yeah, it's all from court testimony. So it was all testified in court about all these little incidents that happened.
Okay.
So this event gives Sylvia significant health issues. Specifically, it makes her incontinent, so she can't hold her bladder. So because Sylvia would often wet herself as a result of this horrific incident, Gertrude ends up locking Sylvia downstairs in the basement, which is the basement that the police would find her dead in. And in this basement was just that one soiled mattress on the ground. There was no heater because, remember, it's Indianapolis. And there was no toilet. And so Sylvia was forced to defecate on the floor. But when Sylvia would defecate on the floor, Gertrude would get mad. And she would tie up Sylvia and submerge her in a bathtub full of boiling hot water as a means to, quote, like, cleanse her. Because she was such a filthy girl. And then afterwards, and she would have like second degree burns all over her body, Gertrude would rub Sylvia with salt all over her body.
That had to hurt so bad.
Let's take a break real quick. I got a little baby in the room. All right, guys, we're back. Brooklyn's got a corn dog and she's safe in the living room. Oh, before we start, just a really quick story. Yesterday, Brooklyn told Birdo to stop acting like bitches. And I love my child.
Okay. Did he stop?
No, he never. Oh. I'm just kidding, Birdo. I love you. Okay, so, you know, we just got done talking about the salt baths. So Gertrude, at this point, begins inviting the neighborhood kids over and starts charging them money to push Sylvia down the stairs and to basically beat on her.
What the fuck?
Gertrude even takes one of these neighborhood kids. His name is Ricky Hobbs. He's 15 years old. And she kind of like hires him. And when I say hires him, I don't think she started paying him, but as like a personal assistant to help with beating on Sylvia.
Because it was such a hard job.
Yes. Yeah, so this Holy boy shit. Would come over often and kind of be her little sidekick. There were later theories kind of thrown out there that like she would sleep with him, but there was never anything substantiated on that. Mm-hmm. But so Ricky and Gertrude kind of became the little dynamic pair that would be the piece of shit couple that kind of beat on Sylvia. Not beat on Sylvia the most, but kind of orchestrated her beatings. So they would make Sylvia clean up the basement after she would use the floor as a restroom by forcing her to eat her own feces and drink her own urine.
No, wow. My God. Fuck. It just keeps getting worse.
Yeah. And honestly, it's like, it's really bothering me.
And I thought the
it really is.
Salt I'm was sorry. Pretty bad in the wounds because I know about blisters.
Yeah.
From sunburn.
Well, even these kids are like, they're 15. Like, that's old enough to know what's wrong and what's right. You know Absolutely. What I mean?
And I'm going to tell you, Christina, the ending of this is going to piss you off too.
Well, thanks for that.
There's warning. Not going to be a great fucking...
Well, I already know she dies.
Well, beyond that. So Jenny, Sylvia's little sister, she ends up reaching out to her older sister, Diana, by writing her a letter. And she tells Diana everything in this letter that's going on in the Banaszewski household. Now, Diana receives the letter. She reads it. And then she decides Jenny is lying and initially ignores it.
Oh, my God.
So I don't know if she finally decided to go check in on the girls or like whatever made her want to go do it. But she would later go visit Jenny and Sylvia at the Banaszewski residence. And when she gets to the house, Gertrude would not allow Diana to come in. And So Diana, kind of feeling like something's off, she kind of waits outside until she sees Jenny. And Jenny tells Diana that she's not allowed to talk to her. And Diana's like, well, what the fuck? You're my sister. Why am I not allowed to talk to you?
Yeah.
So Diana just ends up calling social services. And social services come to the house. Gertrude's able to get Jenny off to the side while the social worker's there and basically tells her that if Jenny says anything, that she would beat her too. And so Gertrude ends up telling the social worker, like, yeah, Sylvia's not here. She ended up becoming a prostitute and prostituting herself, and then she ran away. But this whole time, Sylvia's in the basement, like, completely beat on.
And unaware that, you know, social services is even there.
Yeah. I mean, she's probably just so out of it at this point that she doesn't even, you know?
Yeah.
So,
do you know how far along we are from when they initially moved in? Like, has it been has a month passed already, or?
This is about August or September.
Okay.
Because the girls moved in July, and I want to say, when did I say they came to the house? Let me see. In October.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, so we're probably in August or September at this point. So after the social worker leaves, nothing comes of it. They don't report it. They don't really deem anything. They just basically listen to Gertrude Banaszewski and say, okay, this girl became a prostitute. She ran away, whatever. Chalks it off. So for whatever reason, there's one incident where Gertrude ends up taking Sylvia upstairs from the basement, and she ties her up to a bed, and then she tells Sylvia, like, listen, if you can go the entire night without wetting yourself, then you can start sleeping upstairs again. And then the next morning, Gertrude goes upstairs, and then Sylvia had wet the bed because she's incontinent because mm-hmm. of the abuse that she sustains. So again, Gertrude drags Sylvia to the living room, and she has all the neighborhood boys come over, and then she forces Sylvia to do a striptease in front of everybody, take all of her clothes off, and then again has her perform sexual acts on herself using a Coca-Cola bottle.
This woman's fucking sick.
Yes.
Sick.
So that 15-year-old Ricky Hobbs, Gertrude's little
sidekick?
Fucking piece of shit assistant, yes. Mm-hmm. He would later testify that they were all in the kitchen kind of hanging out when there was like a conversation about tattoos that came up. And Gertrude brings Sylvia in, she binds her, she gags her, and then she kind of rhetorically asks her, like, if, hey, do you know what a tattoo is? And then Gertrude tells Sylvia, quote, you branded my children, so now I'm going to brand you.
What the
fuck? Yeah, what does that even mean?
I don't know what that means. Like, if anybody branded your fucking children, it's you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she has Sylvia stripped down naked, and then she drags a chair up to her. Gertrude grabs a sewing needle, she heats it up with the lighter, and then she begins carving into Sylvia's stomach, and that's the words, the I'm a prostitute and proud of it. But she only goes as far as she gets the I, and then she gets the M and am, and then she decides that she's over it. So she gives it the needle to Richard, and she basically has him finish the, like, the,
yeah,
I don't even know if you'd call it a tattoo, the fucking engraving in her stomach. And Richard would later testify that he admitted to hitting Sylvia about 4 or 5 times during this whole ordeal because she kept flinching. And then after they finished this tattoo, they end up deciding they also wanted to carve an S into her. And then people kind of theorized that it was like S for slave.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they do is they carve like the top part of the S under her upper stomach. And then these dumbasses end up accidentally going backwards on the bottom part, and it ends up turning into a 3. So instead of the loop kind of looping around like an S, they do the loops the same way, and it ends up being a 3. And we'll post a picture of her stomach, and you'll see the 3 with the I am a prostitute and proud of it on our Instagram. See it. we'll put the, you know, the content on there. Yeah. But that's kind of one of the really popular photographs when you Google the story, is like the words carved.
Do you have it on hand?
I do have it on hand. Let me see. Well, no, I don't, but I'll show you afterwards.
Okay.
I feel like you're already really mad. I don't want to piss you off more. So at this point, Sylvia is like in a horrible state. And there's one night where Jenny will later testify that she ends up sneaking down to the basement where Sylvia is sleeping. And Sylvia tells Jenny that she knows she's going to die. Like, she could just feel it. She's just in a horrible state. She's been beaten. She's got know, she's just been abused to the point of almost death. So shortly after this, Gertrude also realizes that Sylvia doesn't have long to live. So she brings Sylvia upstairs, feeds her a good meal, gives her like a decent bath, not like a hot scalding bath, and like kind of cleans her up. Then she has Sylvia sit at the table, and then she has Sylvia write a letter to her mom and dad. But this entire letter, Gertrude is dictating, like basically telling Sylvia like what to write. And so in the letter, Sylvia talks about her sexual exploits or supposed sexual exploits. And then basically says that, tells her mom and dad, like, you know, she received a lot of beatings from clients because she was a prostitute. So a lot of the Johns would constantly beat her. So that's why she was beat so bad. And then she also apologizes to Gertrude in the letter, apologizing for being such a nuisance, for causing all the stress that Gertrude underwent, for soiling all the mattresses in the house. And then in the letter, she also talks about how she had recently left with a group of boys, and then she engaged in sexual acts with each of the boys. And then after that, the boys ended up beating her so badly that she was to the point where she was almost dead. So that's why she said she wrote the letter. That's the letter that she dictated to her parents.
Oh, that's wow. Fucking crazy. And by the way, we're looking at the picture now of the, well, whatever you want to call it, on her stomach, the scarring. That's fucking wild.
Yeah, it's really ugly.
That's horrible.
So after Sylvia dictates or ends up writing this letter, I know she's so beautiful, huh? We'll post that picture on there too.
Yeah.
That'll be the cover photo. So it's not like it's just like sitting in the face. So we'll post the picture of Sylvia Likens, and then we'll have the photograph of like, her stomach after the fact. So after Sylvia writes this letter, Gertrude starts talking with that Ricky Hobbs, and they start kind of talking about places to dump Sylvia's body because she's that bad at this point. She's getting close to death and they know it. That's why they had her write the letter. That's why they cleaned her up. That's why they kind of gave her a meal to make it look like the abuse was as little as possible and to kind of mask it.
Right.
So Sylvia gets up because she's like, I'm going to die. And she tries to fucking run out of the house, but she's malnourished. She has no muscle mass. She is incredibly exhausted, and Gertrude intercepts her before she's even able to make it out the front door. Then Gertrude rips a curtain rod off of the fucking wall and just starts beating Sylvia in the face with this curtain rod. So Gertrude, 12-year-old John Banaszewski, which we haven't talked about, but he's also one of the Banaszewski children, and then that Coy Hubbard, they drag Sylvia down to the basement, and then Coy beats Sylvia until she goes unconscious. So this, at this time, is around October, where very close to when, you know, she's found dead. Mm-hmm. And Gertrude goes down to the basement with Coy Hubbard, and then they again spend hours beating on Sylvia. And then neighbors would later admit, including the neighbors that went to that barbecue and witnessed the black eye on Sylvia's face, that they could hear a banging noise and someone screaming for help coming from the basement of the home in the middle of the night. And then the banging noise turned out to be Sylvia. She had found a little shovel and she was banging it against the concrete ground to get somebody's attention. Wow. And then even one of the neighbors was like, yeah, I heard it. I was going to call the cops, but then the banging stopped. So I figured whatever was wrong, like, had ended. So none of the neighbors called the cops, even though they heard the girl screaming. They heard somebody banging, and it was like, it was so loud that it woke everybody up in the neighborhood pretty much.
That pisses me off so badly. And I don't, even if it was in 1965, right?
Yes.
No. This yes. isn't 1919 or like 1910. 1965, there was police officers, like everyone. I don't know. There's no reasoning.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find the logic behind it. And what they're saying, there's no logic. Like, they should have called the cops.
It was completely unavoidable. There was so many different times where somebody could have ran and called the cops or stopped or interjected at any time and saved somebody's life. But it just, the person that came close was Diana, but that's, you know, she left it with the social worker. Social worker didn't do anything.
CPS is fucking there. That's wild.
Now, on October 26, 1995, Gertrude's putting Sylvia into one of those scalding baths when Sylvia stops breathing. And so they all try to give Sylvia CPR, but Sylvia's already gone by then. She had passed away.
I don't get it. They're like beating this girl, beating her, but want to still keep her alive just to beat her?
Yeah, because they know that once she's once she dies, they're caught up.
And who are they going to beat?
So they did call the police, and when cops, so they did call the police, like, you know, they did call the cops, but they, you know, Gertrude does this because she thinks that she has an alibi with the letter, and,
yeah,
you know, she's a prostitute. She got beat on a lot. So when the cops come to the residence, the first thing Gertrude does is give them that note that Sylvia fucking, that she dictated to Sylvia to write. So Jenny, she finds a police officer, and she's able to pull into the side, and she whispers to the police officer, "Get me out of here and I'll tell you everything." And so the police officers aren't fucking dumb. They see this girl, like, that's obviously, there's obviously some kind of horrendous crime that went down, not from her being a prostitute. And then they just arrested Gertrude right then and there. And it was later discovered that every single Banaszewski children, minus one-year-old Dennis in the household, had taken part in abusing Sylvia.
Oh my God.
Among the other children. When an autopsy was conducted, it revealed that Sylvia Likens had over 150 cigarette burns all over her body.
Oh man.
She had severe muscle and nerve damage. She had second and third degree burns all over her body. And they said her lips were completely severed, and they said it was as a result of her biting through them, kind of as a way to cope through the pain of all the abuse that right. she had sustained.
Wow.
And then, trigger warning, her vaginal cavity was completely, was severely damaged, and it was completely swollen shut. But when they did do a vaginal exam on her, they did discover that her hymen was intact, which basically means that she had never had sex. So all their, like, in her entire life, that, so she was a virgin. So they mm-hmm. said that basically all these claims of her being a prostitute, her being a whore,
yeah,
they were completely untrue. And then the official cause of death was swelling to her brain. And then they said it was actually, she died also from shock from the pain that she endured during them carving her stomach.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you've been to an autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
And I have. I can't believe, like, just imagine what that guy's going through, having to do that autopsy, or a woman, it could be either or, but that had to have been a horrible one.
I couldn't see an autopsy of a child.
No. I'd only been to an adult.
Especially one that died as a result of such violent circumstances. Yeah, I just couldn't. I think having children makes you a lot more sensitive to things of
absolutely.
That nature.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So here the trial starts, right? So Gertrude, her children, John, Paula Banaszewski, Ricky Hobbs, Coy Hubbard, they were all put on trial for the murder of Sylvia Likens. Now, there were charges initially filed on, like, other neighborhood children, but they were later dropped, probably just because they're just trying to make sense of everything, and then they had insufficient evidence. Stephanie, Gertrude's 15-year-old daughter, she was not charged after she agreed to turn state's evidence, and she testified on behalf of the prosecution, so she wasn't charged. And then during the course of the trial, they all ended up getting different lawyers. So each one of the defendants kind of, I guess their defense was that they all pointed fingers at everybody, at each other.
Yeah, I'm sure. Because they're not trying to get in trouble.
Yeah, no one wanted
to. For being pieces of shit.
No one wanted to take blame for Sylvia's death.
You know, and those people are still fucking alive right now.
Mm-hmm. Are they?
Well, it's 65 and there were kids back then.
Well.
You know, Gertrude's kids were.
Most of them are not.
No?
Most of them are not, no.
Well, that's probably a good thing.
So Gertrude's lawyer ended up attacking Sylvia in court, accusing her of being a prostitute and among other, like, really ugly lies, which is just horrible form. And is, I don't think that's a very good way of defending somebody, is to attack the victim. I think that nowadays, like, I've read cases where they're like, you know, that's just no defense attorney is like, that's a good call, because no one wants to put blame on the victims.
Well, and especially when the autopsy comes back and says, this girl's never had sex before.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yep. And then you're attacking her saying she's a prostitute.
Yeah.
Like,
get
the fuck out of here. That poor girl.
Among a lot of the testimonies, the biggest one that brought light to the case ended up being 11-year-old Marie Banaszewski. And so they put her on the stand to collaborate all the lies about Sylvia that Gertrude's defense had told. And at first, Maria does collaborate all of the lies and says that Gertrude's defense story was completely true. But then during cross-examination, she ends up breaking down and she yells, like, quote, God help me. And then she starts basically spilling all of the fucking facts of what happened to Sylvia and recounting all the horrible events and trauma that Sylvia sustained. So she told him everything on the stand. So
good.
When you asked about court records, Marie told them everything on the stand.
Yeah.
Probably just the pressure. She was 11 years old. She probably, yeah, like, it had to have gotten to her watching that. And then just something to point out, at one point in the trial, the prosecuting attorney, he looked at the huge crowd of people because this was a huge case. I think there was like newspaper articles that called it like the horror house and like, you know, the girl that was abused while like onlookers stood by. And it said, so that he's standing in the middle of the courtroom and he looks at all these crowds of people that are like watching the trial unfold. And he says, if some of these people had been this concerned about Sylvia earlier, she probably would be alive today.
Absolutely.
I'm glad he called him out like that.
Yep. Now, Paula Banaszewski, the 17-year-old daughter, and she's a fucking piece of shit, she took a deal and pled guilty to involuntary manslaughter. She served only 3 years in prison.
Fuck.
Before she was paroled.
Wow.
John Banaszewski, Ricky Hubbard, Ricky, what did I say his name was? I just put Ricky on here, but Ricky and Coy Hubbard, they were found guilty of involuntary manslaughter. They received 18 months in juvenile detention.
That's ridiculous.
What the fuck?
And Gertrude will be found guilty of first degree murder. And she received life in prison, but she would later appeal and be granted a new trial. But she was once again found guilty.
Mm.
But the judge changed her sentence from life without parole to 18 years to life.
Oh my God.
So
what year was that?
It was 1960. The trial was 1966.
Okay.
So Paula paroled from prison in 1972. She moved out of state. She changed her last name and she ended up working as a children's counselor. And she ended up being fired from the school in 2012 because the school discovered who she was.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Good.
Oh my God.
Fuck.
Yeah. So it was really recent. John Banaszewski, Ricky and Coy, they paroled on February 27th, 1968. Ricky Hobbs ended up dying 4 years later. Coy Hubbard ended up spending the rest of his life in and out of prison because he was a piece of shit and died of a heart attack at 56 years old.
Imagine that.
Imagine that. Who'd have thunk it? Wow. Could you have fucking guessed that? And then John Banaszewski, he ended up dying at the age of 52. In December of 1985, Gertrude was paroled from prison due to good behavior. And then reading a lot of posts, they said that she ended up like becoming like the prison mom and that all the girls came to her and she was like, which I think that's really ironic to call her the prison mom when she murdered a fucking child.
Right.
And that they said that like she would like mentor all these girls that came in to prison and stuff like that. What? So
to be psychopaths.
Exactly.
You know, like fucking shit.
Pretty much.
And she moved to Iowa and ended up assuming the alias of Nadine Van Fossett, which, as we know, was her maiden name. And then she ended up dying in 1990 of lung cancer. So she did. Yeah, but she didn't serve as much time as she killed a fucking child. She should have died in prison.
Absolutely.
Yes, but.
No buts.
Yes.
Don't say but.
I'm going to say but. But, ugh, you know, God, damn well that woman's in hell now.
Yeah.
I believe that. So that's a lot worse than prison.
And then Stephanie Banaszewski would later go on, get married, have children, and she became a school teacher. And she's still alive today.
Wow.
And that's the story.
I don't know what to say about that.
And that's the story.
That's fucking wild.
I hope she listens to this, and I want her to know she is a psycho ass.
They're all pieces of shit.
Piece of shit.
Because Stephanie was 15 at the time. She already should have had a moral compass.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Well, when do you think a kid has a moral compass?
I'm going to say 8.
5?
I don't know. I think my 3-year-old has a moral compass. She knows what she does bad.
Oh,
that's true.
Yeah, my 2-year-old, same way.
Yeah.
But legally right now, what is it? I want to say it's like 8. I'm not 100% sure.
Oh, there's
like
a legal moral compass age?
I want to say like when it comes to kids being killers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the story
of
Sylvia Likens.
I did not like that story.
And her brutal abuse. I know.
I feel like super tense in my shoulders.
Maybe for like the next.
You look a little flushed right now.
Well, you know what? Throughout the story, like I was holding this really tight. I don't have a cool arm like you guys. Well, I do, but it's
all of
home.
A sudden her mic just snaps and crush.
So, yeah.
I'm sorry. Maybe I'll do like a more lighthearted one, like for a palate cleanser or something like that for the next
something
story.
Something more positive.
I mean, we talk about murder, so.
I'm pretty sure this is true crime, so someone has to die.
This one was definitely exceptionally atrocious.
Yeah. Well, I think the other ones could have been, but some details were left out on purpose, you know. And that happens on different podcasts.
Yeah.
But, This is wild, man.
This one's really weird to me because the kid's doing it. You know right. what I mean? Like torturing this poor girl.
Yeah, they're all joining in.
I just don't even like scary movies when kids kill, like killer kids and stuff. I just don't like it.
Is there movies that are killer kids?
There are.
Children of the Corn, bro. I talked about it last episode.
I never seen it. I don't watch scary movies. They're fucking ridiculous.
So maybe at some point we'll cover like cults. But I almost feel like this is almost like a cult / herd mentality.
Yeah.
In this sense.
Now that you mention it, I think so too.
Yes. Well, herd mentality. I guess I mean pack mentality, but.
You know, and you hear all these people who are like, oh, you know, back in the day it was so much better. 60s were so much better. The 50s were so much better. They're fucking just as bad.
Yeah.
They're just less population on Earth.
Yes.
It was still as bad. And they didn't have social media. Everybody didn't find out immediately, you know.
That's the only thing is that that stuff didn't spread or there wasn't as much news. Like you freaking sneeze or cough and that shit's on fucking Facebook as a status update. Right. Everybody knows everything and you're completely right. Because they even talk about school shootings and how school shootings have, you know, they have like some kind of uptick of school shootings. But then you look at it and there's been school shootings.
Yeah.
Forever.
Well, you know, it's weird. Well, it's kind of funny when... When there's an earthquake and people are already on like, there's an earthquake like on social media. I'm like, it's like happening right now. Like, how do you just report that?
It's
<That's>
impressive.
I'm so literally impressive. In it right now. The shit's moving around in my house.
That's funny. It's true. It's very true. You're connected all over the world, which means you're more informed.
Yeah.
Which absolutely. They weren't back then. They had to wait for the fucking, they didn't even have the news. They just had a newspaper.
Yeah.
That they had to wait to get delivered.
They absolutely had the news.
In the 1960s?
Yeah. Bad news.
I'm gonna have to fact check that one.
Alexa.
They also
Alexa in here. We should have Alexa on the podcast.
They have this crazy thing.
Called television.
Called the radio.
True.
Are you right?
I know I'm right.
You're not wrong.
They also had TVs.
You're not wrong. Yeah, but they were just local. Were television?
Me and Chisholm are thinking about, like, you know, the little boy on the corner selling newspapers for, like,
with
a penny.
With those little fucking, like, flat hat saying extra, extra. And he's got some weird-ass accent that I still can't locate where that's fucking from. Yes.
Wow.
All right. But, yeah, that's the story. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you guys are starting to see us improve every week because I do definitely, and we love your suggestions, we love your comments, we love your critique, because we're not going to get better unless you guys tell us what you want and what you don't like. So
I don't want to fucking hear it.
I do.
Well, constructive, not fucking rude and disrespectful, but we get really good constructive comments from people.
Yeah,
so
that's good.
I haven't heard anything negative at all, honestly. Like I want to say at least 10 people have told me that our podcast is legit.
Oh,
like,
you know, there's a couple of those negative people.
I get people who
especially
tell me
that don't like me.
Like I said, I don't think people liked the hour and 20 minute long episode last time. And then I also was told that we actually go off tangent quite a bit. And then at first I'm like, yeah, we do. But now I'm like, whatever. It is what it is.
I like that.
It is, yeah, I enjoy it.
My favorite podcast does it.
If you come here just for murder, this ain't what you're getting.
Mm-mm.
This ain't what you're getting. Mm-mm. You're going to get a side conversation. We're going to do a little fireside chat with you. Yeah. If you don't know what that is, fucking Google it. Shout out to, what is it, Eisenhower? Anyways, yeah. So I think we're going to wrap it up here. And again, this is Heard of a Murder. My name is Brittany Bitches. And maybe one day White Claw will come and sponsor me. So mwah, love you guys.
This is Christina. Thanks
for
listening.
See you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.